Well, after I had this team pick last week. What do you think?
Has he been caught now?
I don't know. I'll have to change it. I'll edit my notes here. What do you think?
You're that fickle. He'll be gone after one bad performance.
Cut. Out.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. I'm Eimear Considine and I'm joined in studio today by Ian Madigan and Fergus McFadden. As always, we have a lot to talk about today. We have to talk about Leinster's Pro 14 win, Scotland beating France, Wales winning the Six Nations and looking ahead to the Champions Cup, and we select our Lions team. But first, a little bit of this. We're going to play a clip of Pat Kenny being soaked in some booze after some Leinster celebrations. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in that clip there.
Yeah, well, Mads can tell you as well, because he, I think he's the one that poured around three cans of beer on four Pat. What happened was we'd played the game in Cardiff against Northampton, and we'd managed to win the final. So it was obviously everyone's in high spirits, waiting around to get checked in, and there was just Leinster fans everywhere. Like, there was people chanting, screaming. It was just a great atmosphere, and one of the lads spots Pat Kenny, and he was near enough for the trophy, so they gave him the trophy and he put it above his head. I don't think it has in the video, but I think it was Shane Horgan and Paul O'Donoghue had picked Pat up on their shoulders, and everyone just started soaking him in beer. He was absolutely drenched. But he was quoted on saying to one of the lads, I think it could have been either Paul or Shane when he got down, he said something like, even though he's absolutely drowned in beer, he was like, thank you so much. That was one of the best days of my life. But yeah, it just actually popped into my head because of obviously that final that the lads played yesterday, and probably just a moment like that, or whether it was even a moment together to spend with fans and stuff, is kind of such a shame, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I think that's the one thing that's missing, and so many big moments in the games, and obviously Leinster doing four in a row, it is a phenomenal achievement. But Ian, looking back at other games that you've won, does any moment stick out in relation to like the post-match celebrations and anything that went on after the game?
I think when we won the Six Nations and we were stayed over in Scotland, it was the last game of the Six Nations, and we had to watch France play England in the last game, and it depended on points difference, and I was going through, I think I've spoken about it on the show, but I was going through a pretty cagey time, you know, with the calculator out, seeing how many points had to be scored, and just the relief of that. But it was just a very special night because we stayed over there, which is unusual to stay over after a game, maybe more common for internationals, but also as well, I think some guys were getting drug tested, so it meant we were able to stay together as a team and celebrate together initially, and then went back to the hotel, and I think it was my birthday as well. So it just seemed like there's about 10 things rolled into one. It was a night I'll never forget.
So it was a great night.
Yeah.
There's in 2001, when Leinster lost the Celtic League, they actually won the Celtic League, but they lost the Celtic League trophy, and it got handed into a Garda station in Leixlip. Is that a common occurrence that the cup goes missing and you're like, where the hell, what's that group going crazy? Where is the cup? Has anyone got the cup, or who's actually in charge of the cup on nights out?
I can definitely see how it can happen. You know, it's not like you've got major concern for where the trophy is. If like supporters want to come up and have a go of it, it's not like you're watching them like a hawk, tracking them down, making sure it comes back.
Yeah, I think when Leinster won the double in 2018, we had a get together in Kiley's, and the two trophies were there. And then we went on to the Bridge pub in Balls Bridge there that a few of the lads own, and we had the trophies for the whole time, but I'm pretty sure there could have been a little bit of damage done to the trophies. Like, I don't think lads were too gentle with them after having a few too many drinks. So, the responsibility on keeping them, or who had them, I'd imagine it was probably the captains. They didn't end up in my bed at the end of the night anyway.
Do you ever see the clip of when, I think it was a Dublin minor team, must have been the minor All-Ireland final, but Daniel Radcliffe, like Harry Potter, ended up in a house party with the Sam Maguire, and there's pictures everywhere of him ending up with the cup. But was there ever anyone like really random, really famous that like just happened to like appear in the corner of any like celebrations on your night out? Apart from Pat Kenny.
Jeez, not really that jumps to mind, to be honest, no. Like, I remember the when we won the Amlin Cup in 2013, I brought my medal out underneath my shirt and like went into town.
Why'd you bring your medal out?
Why?
Why, yeah.
Because I was very proud of winning
my medal. It's like being back on sports day. It's like going into school the following day with all your medals on.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But anyway, I got the next day, anyway, I was up and about and it was obviously great crack with the lads and everything. But the following day, I get this message on Facebook from a fella going, you shouldn't be so careless with your belongings, and sent me a picture of my medal. And I was like, it was actually one of my friends had it on him, so I managed to get it back, but...
You were very proud of that medal anyway. And I'm really just delaying the inevitable of chatting about the Leinster win yesterday against Munster. I think, so on Saturday night at the RDS, Leinster won their fourth straight Guinness Pro 14 title with a really dominant performance over Munster. And I think, Ian, the stats really tell it all. They had twice as much possession and 70% territory.
Yeah, it was, you know, you look at the scoreboard, it was 16-6, but... The reality was, off the back of the dominance Leinster had in that first half, they could have easily been 15, 20 points clear at halftime. And in the second half, Munster didn't really throw a punch to get themselves back into the game. Even though it was still, you know, in the balance, it was still, whatever, a 3 and a 7 and a 10-point game. You're thinking, this is possible. But they barely accessed the Leinster 22. And, you know, I think if you look at the key parts of the game, the aerial battle, the scrum... the physical battle, you know, how either team moved the ball around. You know, Leinster were streets ahead in every facet of it for me.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, like I think it was the best opportunity. I mean, a lot of people had said it was probably the best opportunity that Munster were going to have in a knockout game. You know, I know Leinster had beaten them in the semi-final, you know, over the past couple of years, and this year there was a couple of players missing. Obviously, you had the likes of Gary Ringrose missing. You had James Ryan, like proper leaders, some of the best players in the team. Dan Levy wasn't available. Either was Caelan Dorris. Whereas Munster had a full stack to pick from, and they had guys. You know, we were really playing so great during the Six Nations. And yeah, I suppose the Munster fans out there, I'm sure will be deeply disappointed. But I think that there's probably, when it matters, there's probably just still there's a gulf in the standard there, and I think Leinster have shown that, you know, really yesterday.
That's the thing, you're after naming four players there that are like, you know, definite starters on any team, and still like Leinster managed to pick up the pieces, and there were so many phenomenal performances yesterday. I think we touched on Jack Conan last week and his Irish performance, but he was another man that stood up. Rhys Ruddock, you know, he was everywhere, and to be able to call on people even when Dan Levy is missing, or people with that's like, it's just, it's constant, and it's phenomenal that they can, you know, slot in, and the systems are the same, and week in, week out, like, pull out performances like they did.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, in Munster's defence, it was tough, and some guys just fell flat in the day. You know, there's guys who played really well throughout the Six Nations, and then you're asking to replicate it again in a league final, and then replicate it again this week in Europe. It's a very tough thing to do. And, you know, you look at someone like CJ, you know, I'm sure emotionally that would have been a very draining week for him. And physically, like, the toll that the Six Nations would have taken on his body. So, you know, it's hard to keep asking. And it's no surprise that they fell a bit flat. And I think Leinster had a big advantage that, you know, the key guys within that Leinster team and played really well yesterday were there throughout the Six Nations. The likes of Luke McGrath, who, you know, we spoke about last week, he's been playing consistently throughout the Six Nations.
Dev.
Playing really well. Dev of course. Rhys Ruddock, another one who's, I know he got his chance with Ireland.
Scott Fardy.
Jack Conan's been, you know, I know he played in the last game of the Six Nations, but he's still relatively fresh.
Dave Kearney playing all the games.
So... But yeah, it was just one of those days where Leinster just made things go their way, I suppose.
Yeah, I think, and then you even look, you've got Tadhg Furlong on the bench, you've got Johnny on the bench.
Yeah.
James Lowe.
Yeah, like it's scary enough resources to have there from Leinster's perspective. And listen, you're going to have to feel for those Munster lads as well. You have some guys there, you know, Billy Holland finishing up, what a servant, you know. Obviously they're still in the Champions Cup, so there is an opportunity for them to go further, but they seemed really bitterly disappointed, and it's been a long wait for them for trophies. So yeah, you'd feel for them.
It has, absolutely. What is it, a 10-year wait since Munster have actually won a trophy? There's a lot of lads there, you know, that have ridiculous amount of caps for Munster, but nothing at the end of it. And I think yesterday was probably the day, you know, that they felt it was possible. But what do Munster have to do, Ian, heading into the Champions Cup? Like, they'll be deflated playing that game. It's difficult to build back up, and it's constant. It's some guys have played, you know, how many games and how many weeks.
Yeah, there's no doubt it's going to be tough. I certainly don't think Munster are at their best. I think, you know, throughout the league season, I actually thought they played some really good rugby. I think they've grown, especially, actually, ironically, the game against Leinster in Thomond Park. I thought Munster played really well that day, and I was thinking, you know, maybe the tide is turning. But there's guys in the Munster team yesterday, like someone like Joey Carberry. You know, I know he's come back, he's played a couple of games and he's played well, but there's a big difference between playing against, you know, Cardiff or Scarlets or Treviso in a regular league game or playing in a final against Leinster. And you could see there, like, you know, even defensively, like, it's one thing doing it in training, it's another thing your tackle selection in games. And that for me only comes when you've played probably 4, 5, 6 games, especially when you've been out for as long as he have. But, you know, the positive side of it is it's another game under his belt. You know, it'll be interesting to see who they go with this week. Will they, you know, revert back to JJ leading into the Toulouse game, or will they stick with Joey? But look, that's an area that, you know, that there can be big improvement, because we all know what Joey's capable of. He's a class player, and you know, looking forward to seeing what he can do when he gets a run of games.
Yeah, I think the disappointing thing as a Munster fan was the way Munster had been playing throughout the Pro 14. Like, they had been, you know, playing with flair, like offloading, doing things they never had before. You know, obviously they still had the strength in their pack, and obviously Munster, you know, they're known for that. But then, you know, they were able to create opportunities and, like, you know, some amazing individual and team tries that we just didn't see yesterday. It went back to the lack of creativity that Munster had. They didn't fire a shot. They had no opportunity to score a try, which was, I suppose, the most disappointing thing.
Yeah, I think it's down to the opposition you're playing against, you know, and that's probably just the reality of it. You know, Leinster tried and tested that group, even though some of it is still very young. Winning big matches and being used to winning big matches and being composed when you're in a final, you know, and knowing what to do. I thought the variety of Leinster's play was probably better, and you know, I do agree, you know, Munster put together some really nice rugby this year and maybe didn't do it in the final. I think you've got to be very clinical in, you know, in that 80 minutes, and I think Leinster really were. You know, they had a couple of plays offline out in scrum, really nice ones with loop plays with out the back to Johnny off Robbie Henshaw, and they made some great space outside. I kind of felt like the Munster centres were sat down very easily there, you know, particularly Delande, and it just opened up all sorts of space outside of that. And I think from there then they were a little bit spooked, because Leinster had gained such ground on a couple of those plays going out the back. Then you see Robbie Henshaw, you know, dummying, going himself in the second half, making those decisions were just a lot more clinical, and the execution was an awful lot better from Leinster, really. So, yeah, I think you'd be disappointed with that from Munster's perspective, because really they probably had one notable line break when Gavin Coombs made that, you know, break through the middle of the field in the first half. In the second half. And, you know, aside from that, they didn't really penetrate, you know, Leinster's defence that much, so.
No, they absolutely didn't. We'll chat about Robbie Henshaw in a little bit. But in relation to lifting the cup, obviously last year you lifted the Pro 14 Cup with the lads, and James Tracy got karma back on him yesterday, according to the photos. He got his top lifted up. So what Leinster player did you text just to ensure that the karma was received?
I texted half the team. I was thinking actually going in there myself, throwing a Leinster jersey on, trying to sneak onto the podium. No, I think Rudd's had my back there. He pulled his top up, and Tracy's gut was hanging out. So.
Yeah, absolutely. In relation to lifting the trophy, though, Scott Faraday and Michael Bent were also there lifting the trophy with Dev Toner. When Leo Cullen was asked after the game, you know, is it anything to do with retirement? He was just like, no, you know, they're leaders on the team, and absolutely just brushed it off. But those guys haven't actually had their contracts renewed yet. Is that something that players who are leaving, like yourself, tend to do, or are we reading too much into this?
I think it's a very unusual time, because you've got a final then you've got knockout stages of Europe, then you've got a Rainbow Cup. So still a lot of rugby to be played. I think Luke McGrath was the captain yesterday, and you know he's got plenty of years left in him playing for Leinster. And Michael Bent wasn't involved in the game, it sounds like, you know, Scott and Michael Bent's contract situation maybe hasn't been sorted yet. We all know that the contract negotiations are going on further and longer into the season because of COVID and the uncertainty and the lack of money, etc. So I haven't heard anything what they're doing, but it was a nice touch, really nice touch to let those guys, you know, Michael Bent came over here in 2013, I think it was. He's been here for 8 years, you know, has done a phenomenal job in the scrum, and you know, he's picked, you know, he's probably one of the most durable guys. We talked about Dev earlier on, plays in every single game, you know, tough matches, made the scrum penalties, I think Leo referenced it. So really great servant to Leinster. And then you've got Scott Fardy, you know, this you know, it was fitting that he was involved in lifting it. Like, I've been involved in Leinster when they've recruited badly, and I've been involved in Leinster when they recruited well. And the importance of having someone like Scott Fardy in your squad, you can't put a value on that. Because there's a rugby ability, obviously, that's there. He's been, you know, got to a World Cup final. You know, he's got so much experiences in different cultures and teams and countries. But it's the person as well. You need a fit for the club that has the same values, comes in, fits in seamlessly. He's just that guy, and he's, you know, great crack in the change room, but a really, really good professional. And I think it was brilliant to see those lads all lifted together. It was, I'm sure, quite emotional for them.
Yeah, what's nice as well about it is there are three guys that would have played in nearly every league game this season. You know, and that's important. And I think, in fairness to Leo, he's very good at rewarding guys who've you know, put it in the regular season league games. Someone like Rory O'Loughlin yesterday, he's played the majority of the games. And yeah, as Ferg touched on there, like Michael Bent has been a pillar to Leinster's success. Like the league is quite often decided during, you know, the autumn internationals, the Six Nations. It's how your team can cope without the internationals. And the likes of, you know, Dev, Benty, Scott Fardy, you know, they have a big part to play in that.
But even with Luke McGrath last week, we were discussing, like, who will start, you know, based on Six Nations time. And it was great that Luke McGrath and Ross Byrne started, and obviously Gibson Park and Sexton on the bench. And it was nice to see those players rewarded too.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, it was. And it kind of, you know, because I saw some articles in the paper saying, you know, Leinster are maybe not picking their strongest side, but I think people probably don't understand it. So you got Johnny coming off of Six Nations. He just played, I think it was 380s in a row or two. You know, there's going to be an element of fatigue there. I think they actually used the resources and the players they had there really well. You got, you know, Ross, who wants to prove a point. He's probably been chomping at the bit in Irish camp and has also still played a bit of rugby. I thought he had an outstanding game.
Yeah.
But back to Dev again, because the one person didn't mention there was lifting the trophy. I thought it was funny picture on Instagram where he was lifting it on his own, and there's probably around 8 players behind him that aren't going to be in that picture because he's just so big.
But they're trying to hold the cup and they can't get to it.
What a legend! Like, and what a nice touch again for him to have been involved in that. But to, you know, to break Gordon Darcy's record of the caps, and plenty more to come from him as well. Just a phenomenal achievement, and such a great guy and an incredible player.
So two players that that were involved in both Munster and Leinster at the weekend was Tadhg Byrne and Robbie Henshaw. And both players have actually just got nominated as a potential player of the Six Nations. So two players that we've spoken about throughout the weeks and their influences on the games. And you have to say that they have been well-deserved.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, like Robbie backed it up again with a big performance yesterday. And in fairness to Tadhg, I thought he had another very good game, but he's a marked man, especially in Interpros. Guys who've played with him in the Irish setup, they know, like, if they see that blue scrum hat, like, get him out of that. Anywhere around the breakdown, he's going to be targeted. And in fairness to Leinster, they did a good job at nullifying that. I think there was only a handful of turnovers. But yeah, looked good on them. And they certainly deserve it off the back of how they performed.
Yeah, so the Rainbow Cup fixtures were just confirmed for April and May during the week, starting off with some local derbies. So obviously the Irish teams will play the Irish teams first and so on and so forth. So Ian, when do you think you'll get a bit of sun and get to head down to South Africa and play those games?
If I'm being honest, I don't think that's going to happen in this season. Hopefully, you know, post pre-season next year and everyone gets vaccinated and you know, the protocols are in place for us to be able to travel over there and it to be safe for games to be played.
There isn't a lot of time. Like, if you look at the schedule with the Champions Cup fixtures and then the Rainbow Cup, the three games you have to play, there isn't actually a lot more time for cross travel between countries.
I think September would be probably a good month to aim for with that. I think with this current Rainbow Cup, I think it's either going to be the South African teams coming over and basing themselves here. I think there was talk of one of them maybe being in Dubai, another one being in the UK, another one maybe being in Ireland. So, look, we're kind of being drip-fed the information as players. We got the fixtures during the week, which is great. Gives us something to aim at. And, you know, for us, it's very much week to week and just focus on the game against Harlequins this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like that. It seems that, you know, we'll give you a little bit of game so that you don't ask questions, too many questions about if we're going to get to go to South Africa at any stage.
Yeah. It was a shame for us. Like, we were gutted not to be in playoff games this year. You know, we bar the two games against Leinster, we went unbeaten, you know. So it was tough. And it only really sunk in for me watching yesterday, you know, watching that final and just going, oh, I'd love to have played in a semi and hopefully a final this year. But I suppose the opportunity presents itself now with the Challenge Cup and moving on to the Rainbow Cup.
Is that annoying as a squad and as a player that the Pro 14, as it was, got, you know, changed and restructured throughout the season and automatically you had to win your table, win your conference to, like, it put pressure on you throughout the season and then the Rainbow Cup mightn't actually happen? So was there a frustration element with Ulster there?
Yeah, certainly there was, because, you know, the posts are always moving. It's a bit unfair, you know. If we'd known that was the case, not that you'd say, oh, we would have tried harder in games, but your strategy might have been different. Instead of kicking three at the end of a game, you'd have gone, well, you know what, we're going to be competing toe-to-toe at Leinster here. We need a bonus point here, and that might have changed our psyche a bit. But look, for me, I think it's a shame that they didn't cut the league one game shorter and have a semi-final and a final. Now, I know it would have clashed with the Six Nations, but the squads are deep enough and there's enough players there, in my opinion, to be able to do that. And everyone loves the spectacles and the competitiveness of semi-finals. It would have been four Irish teams in the semi-final for the first time ever. So it was definitely an opportunity missed, in my opinion, by Pro 14.
Yeah, 100%. So we look back to the French-Scottish game on Friday, and Wayne Pivac's Wales were fancied by none, I think, including us in the Autumn Nations after those performances heading into this year's Six Nations. But they have ended up as champions after Scotland stood up superbly well to France in Paris. I suppose, first off, was it a bit unfair that the Scottish boys didn't have a full hand based on the Premiership restrictions? Had England been up for a Grand Slam or up for a championship, do you think those rules would have stayed the same for the Scottish guys?
How do you mean now? I don't really understand the question.
So they were restricted with how many players they were allowed to use.
It's basically because it was in an international window.
Because it was out of the window that was actually there. Yeah, I think that maybe, but I think that, you know, Scotland still showed how far they've come. Like, they still managed to beat them over there. And at a, you know, the way they beat them at the end, in years gone by with Scotland, there you go, they give it a bit of a crack, but they're not going to do it, like, you know. But to put together all those phases, it was raining over there, it was difficult. Big French side, a fancied French side, you know, odds on, sorry, not odds on, but like, to beat them by 20 points and get a try bonus point, you know, the odds weren't very good on that. Mm. So it shows that they were huge, the French were huge favourites to win well there. And hats off to the Scots with the people they did have there and their manager. I think when you look at their squad going into the next couple of seasons and even going towards that next World Cup, you've got, you know, Redpath, the young 12, who was outstanding in that first match. He's really one for the future. I think if he had stayed fit for the full Six Nations, you could have been talking about him for, you know, as a bolter for the Lions. But, you know, throughout their team, that guy Jamie Ritchie was outstanding as well. I thought he was one of the best back rows on the day. So they're going to be a very difficult team again next year in the Six Nations for everyone. I think they'll probably be kicking themselves with, you know, with particularly the loss to Wales that probably slipped away from them.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they win that Welsh game, you know, they're going into the one against Ireland full of confidence. I thought, you know, we definitely have Scotland's number at the moment. You know, I think we've beaten them maybe five or six times in a row. But this year, the way those first couple of games have gone, if they'd gotten the win against Wales, going into the game against Ireland full of confidence at home, it could have been a different story. Now, it was a very close game as it was, but I didn't think Scotland played as well as they did against England or against France, against us. And, you know, that's credit to us at the same time.
Yeah, it's disappointing. They still finished fourth. They managed to beat France and England in the same championship. Like, it's a phenomenal year if you look at that, but still finishing fourth place isn't really where they want to be.
No, it's disappointing. I think it was only on, you know, points difference. I think they're maybe level with us. But that was the nature of the Six Nations.
It was 1 point, was it?
Yeah, it was something like that. It was a couple of points, yeah. Yeah, it was the nature of the Six Nations. Any team could beat anyone this year, home or away, which is unusual, and maybe that's partly down to COVID. And, you know, even I think some of the refereeing decisions at the weekend, if there was a full crowd in the Stade de France, it could have been, you know, a pretty nasty atmosphere, and that might have influenced Wayne Barnes a small bit. But yeah, look, it was a fantastic competition, and I think it's good going forward. Obviously, bar the Italians, who got, you know, fairly hosed down in every game, England effectively got the glorified wooden spoon, in my opinion.
Yeah, everyone's happy with that one.
Absolutely, everyone's happy with that one. World or Six Nations announced their six nominees for player of the tournament today. But who, Ferg, in your opinion, I suppose without even knowing the nominees, who do you think would have won that award or who deserves that award?
Well, I think after Wales winning it, it generally goes to a player from the team that's won it. And I think Louis Rees-Sammet would probably be in the mix for me, and maybe Justin Tipperick as well. He was outstanding. So probably those two from Wales. Mm-hmm. And then you talked about the ones from Ireland. But yeah, like Robbie Henshaw, you'd have to think, would be in the mix there as well. Yeah. I know Ty Byrne was really outstanding, but you know, as a back, I suppose. Yeah. And I think he was just brilliant. I think he should be right in the mix there, but I'd imagine it'll go to a Welsh player.
Ian, you should get some sort of an award for name-dropping him early on this year.
Louis, yeah. he's been phenomenal. It just shows, like, when you've got, like, raw speed like that. Now, he's obviously got far more to his game, and he's shown that throughout the Six Nations. But when you've got raw speed, it's a good place to start. And he's someone who's really grown, both for his club, but also, you know, at international level. And I'm sure he's going to be, you know, definitely in the mix to be a starter on that probably right wing.
Mm. Adamin Jones, surely is. I would imagine Adamin Jones might be in the mix for winning that accolade as well.
Player of the tournament.
Maybe.
Was he nominated?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As captain of the winning team, you'd like to think he's in the mix. He's also played really well. It was gutted for him when they didn't do the Grand Slam. You know, just...
Yeah, that look.
Oh, it's hard not to feel deflated. Yeah. But, he's still playing incredibly good stuff.
The other two players are obviously Antoine Dupont and Xander Fagerson, who has been phenomenal for Scotland, I think.
Like Dupont is probably the best nine in world rugby at the moment. I actually thought he had a poor game at the weekend. His instincts didn't look as sharp. Entomac, who I'm also a big fan of, I thought he had a poor game. I thought he forced things. And it definitely looked like they were chasing the 21 points in their heads. Now, I know they kicked 3 points early on in the game and then kicked another 3 points, which would indicate, you know, they weren't chasing the bonus point too early. But just in their play, they didn't have that patience that they had in some of the previous games. And look, I think that's going to be a big step forward in the learning curve for that group. They still are a young group. They're relatively inexperienced, but, you know, they're a team that I'd say you'd have to have as favourites for next year's Six Nations. You know, they're going to play, I think they'll play Ireland and England in Stade de France, which would be a big help. And hopefully at that stage, crowds will be back. And, you know, the age profile of their side, they're all going to be a year better as opposed to a year older.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll chat about the Lions. Pat thought the best way for us to talk Lions and the current front runners was to select what our starting 15 would be for the first test against South Africa. Fergus, let's start with you. We'll chat about, you know, we'll tease it out who you think might be on your...
You can do the front row.
Yeah, you can start with the front row.
Your speciality. I don't think any of us here pitched very well.
We might just... we'll say maybe
we'll
Wyn Jones.
We'll give it our best crack.
We'll go Wyn Jones, Ken Owens, and I think Tadhg Furlong deserves a start in the front row.
Yeah, I think... I don't know if Tadhg deserves a start, but I think that he's probably the best option to start. And I think he's shown from his... You know, the cameos he's had in the few games, you know, the performance against England, outstanding. You know, Scotland, he had this, like, the dancing feet that everyone saw, you know, really brilliant. So I'd imagine he's in the driving seat, yeah, for a tight head. Hooker is a funny one, because I know, you know, Ken Owens has been so solid, and he's been brilliant for Wales, and I think that what will, you know, work in his favour is Gatland knows him really well. But I wonder, is there chance for a bit of a bolter? Like, you need big hookers, but you need athletic ones to play South Africa. And Ronan Kelleher really is. I think if Gatland has watched him and he likes him, I think he would be a great guy to bring down there. And I think he could be a bit of a wild card to start.
Yeah, it's a funny one, hooker, because you look at the Six Nations, no one. Bar Ken Owens, who obviously played very well, was on the winning side. No one really took the bull by the horns. And someone like Jamie George, he's now going back to play in the Championship. So he doesn't actually have an opportunity to really put his hand up in the Premiership.
He probably wasn't playing by his standards his best.
No, he wasn't. But, like, you know, you'd be thinking, right, I'm back to my club, I can still salvage it. If Sarries went and did the Premiership and European double and he was at the centre of that, then he would have been back in the mix. I don't think he's someone now who they can pick. He's not going to have played top-level rugby in this calendar year going into that Lions tour. So it definitely is teed up for a bolter. And someone like Ronan Kelleher, who's going to be playing top level rugby in both the Rainbow Cup and the Champions Cup, there's no reason why it couldn't be him.
But I'd agree with you, yeah. And the loose head Jones from Wales, he's been brilliant. He, you know, man of the match performance there in one of their games, and been a very solid performer. So you'd imagine he'd be nailed on there.
Yeah. Fairness to Rob Herring as well. Like, he was rock solid in the Six Nations. You know, the line has come on a huge amount in the time that Paulie's been there, and I think all the hookers were struggling a small bit, you know, leading into the Six Nations. But I thought he was a really consistent performer, and, you know, if he can kick on a bit now with Ulster, he could definitely put himself in the mix.
Yeah, I think then you move into second row, another area of expertise for us.
Absolutely. But
people probably call me crazy for saying this, but I think that I'd go with Wyn Jones and James Ryan, and I, you know, maybe keep Atoja on the bench. And I'm sure people might think I'm crazy for saying that, but I think that James Ryan's very unlucky with the concussion, and he'll be stepping out. But I think he will have a run in, hopefully, if Leinster manage to beat Toulon for games to show what he's about, because I didn't think Atoja was playing his best rugby, being honest. And I think, you know, he put in a strong performance in one or two of the games, but not consistently. And I think that James Ryan, he just has that consistency. And Wyn Jones is probably going to be nailed on realistically. He's probably favoured to be captain. What do you think about the row, second row?
You surely have to put Bird in there after getting nominated for player of the tournament, or would you
but
put him a back
six,
row?
Though, you see.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah,
I thought he played his best rugby at six, or just like Brown.
I think it's an open one. I wouldn't be fully convinced on James Ryan for it yet. I've been obviously very impressed with him. He's a quality player, but that is one that is going to be come down to how you're playing for your club in the lead up to the selection. I'm a big fan of Johnny Gray. You know, he's been probably the best second row for me over the last 3 or 4 years. So he's someone who puts it in, week out with Exeter, and will be a good match for the South Africans.
Yeah, moving on to the back row then, there's an immense amount of players that you could pick.
Yeah, there is, and I think, again, it's horses for courses, and then horses that have performed for you. And, you know, like, I think Gatland, he just knows Justin Tipperick so well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably going to be nailed on for him. He's been pretty outstanding for them. Then in the back row, I feel like the number 8 jersey is kind of it's up for grabs, really. He might go to Faletau. Faletau travels. Mm-hmm. He's been playing his best rugby in years. Yeah. Billy Vunipola probably hasn't hit the form that you would.
Another guy is not going to get club rugby now as well. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a big risk, and it's a risk that, like, Eddie Jones took. Didn't pay off. You know, is Warren Gatland going to take the same risk? I don't think so.
Mm.
Do you think CJ has an opportunity to be there?
I think he'd have a good opportunity to travel. I don't think he'll start, though. I think Faletau has a much better chance of starting than CJ. That's my feeling on it. And at six, then I'd probably pick Tighe, because, you know, he has that extra bit of height in the line out. He showed how mobile he is being back there. His performances, you know, in the Six Nations, I'll probably have him in there, to have those three, yeah.
What about the seven then? Hamish Watson nominated for play of the tournament, but there is so many, like Curry, he's seven, isn't he, Underhill?
But Justin Tipperick, I'd probably put him in there, but yeah. I don't know, what do you think?
Hamish Watson's one of those guys, he just, every time he plays, he just seems to pop up everywhere. You know, he's, it's hard to know, obviously he's not the biggest of guys, you know, against the South Africans, will he look to go with someone who's a bit bigger, but... He'd have incredible competition, and whatever way Scotland play, it really seems to suit him.
Hmm.
We had a bit of chat about the nine position. I went for Murray. I think he's the best of the nines. I would say that. But I had this team pick last week. What do you think?
Has he been caught now?
I don't know. I'll have to change it. I'll edit my notes here. What do you think?
You're that fickle. You'd be gone after one bad performance.
Good. Good. Out.
Yeah, I think that Connor will definitely travel to over there. And I think the fact that Gatland knows him, you know, he played so well in that tour to Australia, you know, when they beat them, and he'd made the nine jersey his own in the last test. And again, the fact that Gatland knows him well, if he'd pick his form up from Munster, he'd be in a good position. And then I think Ben Youngs will travel as well. I'm not so sure. It's actually a position that's going to be hard to pick. I think
Ben Young hasn't been one. He'd another guy before the Six Nations you would have thought was nailed on. After the Six Nations, not so much.
Yeah, it's up for grabs, because it's kind of the opposite to the back row almost, that there was so many people playing so well in the back row that I think the standards of the nines has probably been sub.
Yeah, Davies, in fairness, you know, again, having to go back to the team that's won us, I thought he was very good. And he's a lot to his game. He's nippy, good box kicker, very, very good passer, plays with a seriously high tempo. And I think if that's the style of play that they're looking to go with, he's probably the man for the job.
Yeah. I'd ask you about the 10.
Yeah, I think Johnny should be going again. He was the form 10 for me in the Six Nations. I know there's been a lot of talk about Finn Russell, and he was incredible last year, especially in the Champions Cup and for racing in the top 14. But for me, in every head-to-head this year, Johnny's outplayed his opposite number. We know what he can do with his goal kicking, which is something that Finn, for me, struggles with. It doesn't look like he's figured it out yet. And
would you consider Bigger?
Yeah, I would. I think, you know, even like Bigger's aerial ability is something that no other tens, you know, offer. Very good defensively. I think Johnny probably gets the back line going better and the interplay with the forwards. I don't know what you
wonder
think.
Will they bring, like, if they're going to bring three tens, will they bring three tens?
Gatland usually just brings two, but like if Farrell goes,
could bring,
he's
so they could bring,
yeah.
They could bring Bigger, go, well, they could bring Bigger and Johnny,
yeah,
and then you bring Farrell as a centre, but he can cover,
cover
10. Because I agree, I think Johnny, because the thing is, you're leading into a Lions here, you know, some guys, a little bit of a benefit of the doubt, might go reputation, but you've got to be playing very well, and Johnny is playing very well, and Owen Farrell probably isn't playing very well, so. People are talking about him at 12. Robbie's got to be at 12. He's got to be at 12. He's been one of the best backs in the world for the last year in that position. So I think, you know, he's got to be in the driving seat to start there. He's shown that he's got so much variety to the way he can play. He can bash people. He can step people. He can, like, win those aerial battles. Beautiful passer, kicker. I just think he's a great option. And I think he's toured before. He knows what it's about. And... probably Johnny Davies, because again, you know, quality player, knows what it's like to start in the Lions tour, Gatland, a favourite of Gatland, bit of a leader. I would say those guys that start in the centre. And then you're moving on to the wing. Louis Rees-Amit, you'd imagine he is in the driving seat to pick up one of the spots there on the wing with maybe a Johnny May or Anthony Watson on the other side. I think anyway, because I think you're gonna need really raw speed, like for the back three that South Africa have and the broken field runners. I think you need, you know, solid, very solid wingers, but you also need like rapidly quick wingers, and they are two guys that have that.
Yeah, wingers a funny one as well, like, because you know it changes so quickly on form. It's not like, you know, props or second rows, you know exactly what you're getting from them. You're going to see over the next few months, you're going to see some wingers absolutely carve up, you're going to see other wingers go on a bit of a dry spell, so it's going to be very much dependent on how they go for their clubs and who really strikes form and, you know, in their league and in the Champions Cup.
Yeah, Van der Merwe has been phenomenal too though for Scotland.
Yeah, like I think as well, like his physicality against the South Africans, you know, that's something that they're definitely going to have to look at. You know, if you have him on one wing and Rees-Amit with his speed on the other wing, you've got lovely balance between, you know, speed, bringing in your blind winger, using him for pace, bringing your other blind winger in and using him for power to run over someone.
And to be fair,
that's bloody tough to defend against.
He's an improved defender as well. It probably was the side of his game let him down a little bit reading, but he's had a great Six Nations. I think he was one of the top try scorers in it in the campaign. And yeah, and then 15, you'd imagine Stuart Hogg. I think he's had a brilliant tournament. I think he had another great game there against France. In fairness, his kicking game is such a weapon with the length he has. He can also kick off the tee, and then just what he brings with that counter attack. So you'd imagine that he'll have that nailed down to start.
Yeah, like I thought Liam Williams had a bloody great game. I know it was a bad error to get yellow carded at the end of the game, but
apart from that,
I thought he was fantastic. You know, his attacking, his aerial game. He's also a very good kicker of the ball. In fairness to Hugo Keenan, like he's got to be in the mix now.
How many fullbacks do they usually bring?
He can cover wing, like, so he's a utility fullback. You know, they probably look to bring two, but one of them probably have to cover the wing.
He might go and does not get a lot of probably.
Well,
you
could go and catch
games.
Form and still get in. Yeah. You know, but yeah, I think probably what the two other Liam and Hogg have
on form, you'd think Hugo would go with Stuart Hogg, but the thing that comes into a coach's head in these situations is who's done it for me.
Yeah.
Under me, and Liam Williams has done it. You know, you saw he started at 15, and you saw what he did for that try where Sean O'Brien and he made that break.
Yeah.
Like
he
is a big game player. That's the one thing that would maybe work against maybe Hugo for not travelling.
Yeah. So there you have it. Our Lions team picked. I heard it first here.
Murray cut.
Well, that's if Hugo changed it in that second.
Yeah. I know. Look, you predicted Louis Rees-Amit to be like on fire this year, and you got it right. And you also predicted the Australian, the Lions going to Australia, and that was potentially in the mix.
He's predicted enough stuff.
Look, if you talk enough,
that doesn't seem to get brought up.
If you talk enough, some of it's bound to be true. Before we finish up, we'll just have a brief chat about the Champions Cup. So it returns on Friday night after a severely disrupted tournament saw the pool stages wrap up only after two rounds. Connacht and Ulster are in the Challenge Cup too, but let's start with the game at the Aviva. On Friday, Leinster versus Toulon. So Ma Nanu will miss the game after he was sent off in Toulon's 54-16 league defeat to Lyon. Johnny will surely be a doubt for that game as well. He went off injured.
Yeah, I don't know how bad the injury was. It looked like he got a wallop on the nose or he might have gone for an HIA assessment. So, yeah, hopefully for Leinster he's fit. But listen, you saw what Ross Byrne can do when he stepped in. Pretty, you know, the team is operating at a seriously high level under him. He's, you know, he's been doing it for a number of years now on the big stage with Leinster in the knockout matches. So, interesting to see what team they pick, but it's going to be a challenging game. Leinster will obviously be favourites, and you'd imagine at home they'll beat them. But Ma Nanu will be a big loss for Toulon. That's not ideal for them.
Yeah, Toulon aren't the force of, you know, what they were back in 2014, 2015.
No.
You know, so they don't have that kind of core group of quality players. So I think that would be a pretty comfortable win for Leinster.
Munster versus Toulouse. Munster will be hoping that Peter O'Mahony will be fit after he limped off, actually, in the final at the weekend. The obvious threats, Dupont, Entomac, Colby. If you give a quick prediction, how that game do you think will go?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like if Munster are going to go into that game and just think that their box kicking and winning the aerial game is going to be enough, it probably won't. You know, you've got to be able to play against Toulouse, and they do present you with opportunities, especially on turnover. You know, the style of play that they do, it's offloading, it's high tempo, but there's plenty of mistakes in there as well. And I think if Munster can, you know, make the most of them, you know, there's no reason why they can't beat them at home. Like, we gave it a good crack up in the Kingspan earlier in the season. It's a game that, you know, it's a real sore point for me. I thought we dominated large parts of it. As I said, Toulouse provided us with opportunities. Unfortunately, we provided them with maybe three or four, and they took every one of them. And that's, you know, something that Munster are going to be very conscious of this week. You cannot switch off for a moment against these guys, because there's class across the board.
And finally, up in the Challenge Cup, Leicester are against Connacht. How do you see that game going?
Yeah, I fancy Connacht to win that game. I think Connacht are a very, very tough team to beat in the sports grade.
They'll also be without Bundy as well, with that red card.
Yeah, they'll be a bit miss Bundy massively, but I think Tom Daly has done brilliantly well in the games that he's had for them. He's been really consistent, so you know, he'll be able to go in there and do a job, and I think that they'll have Leicester's number. Like, the sports ground, really tough place to go, and this is you know, Connacht's only chance to win some trophies, so they'll be well up for it.
Yeah, Leicester are kind of on a rebuilding phase. You know, they're definitely in the bottom half of the Premiership. I'm not exactly
sure.
Eighth, yeah. They're better than they were last year. You know, they were lucky that there was no relegation last year. They really struggled. But they have a new coach in, that you can see his stuff is beginning to click. They have beaten some of the good sides in the Premiership this year. So there's no doubt it'll be a tough one. But I think at home, I think you're probably right, Fergie, that the Connacht will have enough.
Yeah. And what about, finally, your game against Quinns over in the Stoop? They're fourth place in the Premiership and playing some decent rugby at the moment.
Yeah, Quinns are playing really well. They had a fantastic game against Bristol, my old team, at the weekend. It was one of the craziest games, or craziest finishes to a game. I think it was on 75 minutes. Quinns were still 12 points up, and Bristol scored a late try and then another late try, and Callum Sheedy got a great touchline conversion to win it. So hopefully that's got Quinns really deflated going into this week. You know, a long bus trip home from Bristol to London. And but look, we're under no illusions. It's going to be really tough going over there. We've played Quinns, I think, maybe four times over the last three or four seasons, and they've all been really tight games. So we know we're going to have to be at our very best to be able to come away with a win.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, cheers, guys, and cheers to everybody for watching and listening today. A big thank you to producer Pat Paul, Anthony Dearmuid, and everybody that has helped in getting this show together. This has been House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. Slán go fóill.
Slán.
House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. Game changed.